Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation.
The Republican-dominated legislature wasted no time launching an all-out assault on parents and transgender Oklahomans' rights, approving on day 7 of the 2023 session measures that would ban gender-affirming care for individuals under 18 and threatens doctors with the loss of their licenses and criminal penalties. What we're witnessing is a political masterclass in hypocrisy, our statehouse elite talking out of both sides of their mouths. In one breath, they fiercely oppose government meddling in personal decision-making. Think education. In the next, they can't resist imposing their morality on others. Think trans care and reproductive rights. It's a miracle most haven't already been fitted with neck braces given the philosophical whiplash. To help us understand what's behind the attack on gender-affirming care and its implications for Oklahoma families, parental rights, and healthcare professionals, we invited Senate Democratic Leader Kay Floyd to join us for this week's ObserverCast. She and her 7 Democratic colleagues in the Senate voted against Republican Senator Julie Daniels' Senate Bill 613. All 40 Republicans favored it. A similar measure, Representative Kevin West's House Bill 2177, was approved by the House Public Health Committee with all 5 Republicans in support and the panel's lone Democrat against. So, Senator Floyd, great to have you back with us on ObserverCast. Can you help us understand the why and the who? Why is this suddenly a thing for legislative Republicans, and who's behind it? Because Oklahoma isn't the only state that's seeing this battle unfold, right?
That's correct. Now, my understanding is there's about 83 bills that are either identical or very, very close to what we see and what we're seeing in Oklahoma. 83. More bills throughout the entire country. And the author of the bill in the Senate, the one that Bill 613, which got the most attention and got the most airtime on the floor, said just straight up that the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank in Washington, D.C., she had been in contact with to get her information. So my understanding is that they're behind a lot of these 83 bills in other parts of the country that are going out. I can tell you that if you're a parent in the state of Oklahoma, you've just had a rough 2 weeks while the legislature's been in session, because your ability to make healthcare decisions for your children was literally just taken away from you for specific treatments. And there's been a lot of talk, and we've gotten into the weeds on a lot of things about the treatments itself and when it's needed. But the bottom line is, this is just the tip of the iceberg. If the state, through the legislature, through the Republicans, are going to come in and pick and choose what treatments parents can choose for their children, then we're going to see more of this. And it's almost totalitarian. Yes, we agree with this treatment, so you can have it. No, we don't agree with this one, so you can't have it. You can't have access to it. So there's a lot to unpack.
Well, I mean, just this brings me back, honestly, to the 2010 ACA discussions about, so-called death panels, right? Like the accusations against people trying to pass the Affordable Care Act, saying that these, random panels of strangers would be determining care. It's like, well, and then here we are, from the very people who fought against Medicaid expansion, who fought against Medicaid, who fight against federal encroachment, et cetera, this is precisely what they're doing. Is they're literally coming into our homes and determining what we can and cannot do to receive the proper medically based, evidence based care for our children.
No, you're exactly right, and the inconsistency, even as recently as just the last 3 years that we've seen, the discussion about vaccinations during COVID, the discussion about wearing masks during COVID, all of these decisions, and the vaccinations, has gotten more more discussion during COVID, but the vaccinations, I mean, you both have been at the Capitol a long time. You know, the anti-vaxxers and the pro-vaxxers, that's been a dialogue that's been going on. Well, I've been there 11 years, going on the whole time. But it became more of a public discussion with COVID. And this is completely, this bill and this decision and this pathway is completely inconsistent with parental choice. You know, parents should be able to make the decisions about if their child has a vaccination. Parents should be able to make a decision whether a child wears a mask, whether their child wears a safety belt in the car. I mean, it's shocking how inconsistent and off topic this is for the Republicans up at the Capitol.
I mean, and you pair that against the simultaneous rhetoric coming from the State Department of Education now under Secretary Walters, right? Fund students, not systems. You know, and he's trying to defund systems and fund students. And then we see the exact same opposite when it comes to things that are, I mean, a life or death matter when it comes to gender affirming care for some of these kids.
Yes. And it's interesting because during the Q&A with the bill's author in committee and then again on the floor, I just kept asking her, so why are we doing this? Why this particular group? And she kept saying, we just need to get these kids to 18 so they can make their own decision. Well, here's the thing. The medical decisions that are being made for children that are transitioning are being made by the parents a lot earlier than 18 years old. And they're being made with the consultation with the physicians and with psychologists and sociologists. And I mean, these are not lightly taken decisions these parents are making. So 18, in a lot of cases, is too late. But the question she could not answer was, where are the parents in your scenario? I mean, are we just assuming that all of these children have no parents? Or are we simply taking away the parents' right to make a determination that they need this medical treatment? And I honestly couldn't get an answer specifically addressing that question because they don't have one. They know this is an anti-parent choice bill. They know it is, and they don't have a good reason for it.
So is it all just strictly then a religious preference? Because it does fly in the face, and I couldn't help but just, you know, I about fell out of my chair right after the bill passed the other day in the Senate. You know, Ryan Walters issues a press release that includes this line: questions of sex, morality, or religion will only be decided by Oklahoma parents, not the government.
I don't know what to tell you. I will tell you, in committee, we got an exact opposite answer from the bill's author, because I said, why should the state have total control of healthcare decisions regarding the children? And he said, why is the state taking control? And the author said, because, and this is a quote, the legislature is the supreme policymaker of the state, close quote.
Ooh. So,
yeah.
That's scary language right there.
The state.
The legislature is the supreme policymaker of the state. That is in direct contradiction to the statement you just read from Walters. Because the bill's author was saying, you know, we don't agree with this practice. We don't think parents are making good choices. So we are going to make it state policy. We are going to make it state policy that parents have no right, no decision-making process in this specific treatment for their children.
So can you... give us a rundown of some of, you know, what the legislation stipulates, sure. And then some of the specific errors that are in there, besides that it's just terrible.
So it's a bill that basically dictates to healthcare providers what they can and cannot do as far as treatment protocols for certain conditions. And so you've got, it talks about physicians and physicians' assistants and nurses and osteopaths and other healthcare providers. And it specifically says they cannot do these treatments. And if they do, they'll be charged. They will lose their license. They can go to jail for up to 10 years. They can be fined up to $100,000. And the criminal prosecution shall commence no later than at the age the child reaches 45. So there's the child, the family, or the child has 45 years to take action against these healthcare providers. So that's the statute of limitations. So that's what this bill does. And it also, and we discussed this offline a minute ago, this is one of the scariest things about it, and people don't even realize it because we don't have a lot of attorneys up at the Capitol, but this allows a parent or a legal guardian or what's called the next friend of the child to take action and bring a civil action against the healthcare provider. So we know what a parent is and we know what a legal guardian is, but the next friend is a term of art. It's a legal term of art, and it was used in common law. And what it is basically is if you don't have a parent or a legal guardian who wants to take action against a provider, take action, sue a doctor, then you can have somebody appointed as the next friend of the child. And so I asked the author about this. She was unaware that this was a legal distinction, that this was a legal term. She was unaware that this person, well, let me step back. She was unaware this was a legal term. So I explained to her what it was. And I said, does this person who becomes the next friend of the child have to live in Oklahoma? And she said, no. I said, do they have to know the parents? And she said, no. And I said, do they have to even know the child? And she said, no. I said, so a total stranger can come in from out of state and file a lawsuit against the doctor? And she said, yes. And you know who's going to be paying for that? It's the same group that's got these bills and 83 bills throughout the country. They're going to just start paying people to come into states and file lawsuits. It's mind-boggling.
So what do those groups who are pushing this hope to gain? I mean, what at the end of the day, I mean, what's the advantage to them of this? Just control over people?
I honestly don't know. I mean, the group that she named on the floor of the Senate is a conservative think tank out of Washington, D.C. that's probably responsible for the majority of those 83 bills. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it, and I could never get a straight answer. I don't know if it's a philosophical concern, if they just don't believe in this kind of treatment, if they don't believe that this condition is a real thing, even though medical science tells us it is. So I'm just not sure what the motivation is, but they just kept saying over and over again, we just have to get these kids to 18 so they can make their own decision. And every time they said that, what they were saying was, we're taking this away from the parents. We're taking this decision regarding this condition away from the parents. And nobody can give me a good reason why the parents shouldn't maintain control of their child's health care.
So just to be clear then, I mean, and I know the answer to this, but I just want everyone to understand, like, there aren't 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds, randomly strolling into a random doctor's office and requesting gender reassignment and getting it the next day.
No.
I mean, this is not how this works in any way, shape, or form. Even for adults who want, you know, a transition surgery, right? Like, it is, I mean, there's so much that they have to go through even as an adult, that we're not talking about 12-year-olds going in, talking completely independently of their parents, and receiving this gender affirming care without parental consent.
No, there's this would be like saying that a child was going to go in and request, you know, some other kind of surgical procedure. This just doesn't happen. I mean, we don't, and they couldn't even point to any situation where it does. It's just like, this is ridiculous. A child is not making this decision. The parents or the guardians, along with the physicians and the counselors and the psychologist, and they're making the decision, and there's a lot to it. This isn't something to think that these parents and these healthcare providers do not take this condition, this medical condition, seriously and understand the ramifications of the treatment, is it's past insulting. it's just past insulting to think that that there's some conspiracy of parents and doctors that are just randomly choosing their children to have this condition. It's there's a complete lack of understanding on what this condition really is.
Well, and then doesn't it kind of, I think Senator Hicks brought this up as well. It kind of, this kind of sweeps in a number of other areas of care, like for instance, puberty blockers. If you have a really young child, you know, talking like 7, 8, 9, who is showing signs of puberty, this is what we call precocious puberty. You know, they're the same things that we see, you know, those puberty blockers have, I mean, I'm sorry, it's quite frankly like birth control. It has a number of uses that are medically sound, evidence-based, that could then be blocked potentially through legislation like this. Is that correct?
Yes. And there's, it's, when you look at the number of bills in Oklahoma that have been filed, they're all chipping away at the same thing. They're chipping away at parental discretion, parental decision making, and then they're also threatening the healthcare, our entire healthcare profession, from doctors, nurses, everybody, threatening them to scare them from providing these kind of treatments too. And so then you get into, to your point, you get into a situation where maybe a child needs this for a medical condition that doesn't have anything to do with transitioning. And so is the doctor going to be able to give that to that child without risking being sued and being you know, losing his license and being fined $100,000? I mean, it's going to have a chilling effect. There's no way it can't. And when you've got the when you've got members and people running these bills that can't even explain them or don't even understand some of the wording in them, then it, it gets kind of scary.
It's hard for me to fathom that most Republican legislators don't know that this is a bad thing, that they don't recognize that we're usurping, we're threatening to usurp parental authority. We're creating all kinds of issues for a healthcare industry that's essential to Oklahoma's current and future progress in this state. And yet they roll right along with this thing. I'm just shocked that this, in their minds, isn't a line in the sand.
Let me tell you this, because I completely agree. There was not, I don't think one member of the Republican caucus asked one question of the bill's author on the floor. Not one. Now, some of them debated afterwards in favor of the bill, but and I stepped off the floor for a couple of minutes at one point. But I do not remember any Republican asking the bill author any questions at all. So I assume that that means that they talked about it in their caucus behind closed doors and got all their questions answered that way. But they did not publicly ask any questions. It was just the Democrats asking, how is this going to work in real time? How is this going to affect the parents and the kids and our healthcare providers? And we were, the Democrats were the only ones asking about, you know, what about parental rights? And to your point, Arnold, part of the situation that hasn't even been discussed, or not enough at least, is the business aspect. I mean, what does this tell people who might be wanting to move into the state as healthcare providers? Because we have a physician shortage. We have a nursing shortage. You know, are they going to want to come into a state where at any given point in time, the, you know, supreme policymaker of the state is going to determine that some medical, legitimate medical treatment is going to be outlawed, and they're going to lose their license and possibly do jail time if they do best practices? Are they going to move into the state? You know, if my niece were a nurse and lived in, you know, Texas or what, some other state that doesn't have these kind of laws, I'd say don't come up here, because you're going to be put in an impossible situation of suggesting a treatment which is going to be against the law and could end you up in jail, land you in jail.
Even just someone misconstruing something that's said, you know, I mean, just the, you know, a stray remark or something. I mean, I think of, you know, the school districts that, you know, I mean, because to me, this is all kind of, this is all tied together, right? So the censoring what can be taught in terms of history in our schools, right? And then this sudden push towards, banning DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusivity initiatives. But then this same thing with, with gender affirming care in a medical setting, it really kind of sets up like a system the only word I can think of is like rats, right? Like someone says something and then they get turned into the authorities. And what I'm hearing you say about this specific legislation is it doesn't even have to be someone who was there. It doesn't even have to be someone who knows the child. You know, it could be secondhand, it could be third party insinuation, and then they could bring this lawsuit. Just that kind of society where we really lose our social connections and our, the threads that connect us. Uh-huh. And turns us into a bunch of rats, right? Like, who can operate in that sort of society where we always have to look over our shoulders like this?
I don't know. I think you're absolutely right. And it's the fact that the bill's author didn't realize, and I guess didn't care, that the language in here allowed a total stranger uh-huh. from any place in the country, or maybe even larger than that, a total stranger who doesn't know the parents, doesn't know the child, the parents don't know him, the child doesn't know him, could come into our state and file a civil lawsuit. And I don't know if I threw this in, but by the way, if they do that, then the court, and they win, the court has to award court costs and reasonable attorney's fees to that person. So then it, not only are they coming in from out of state, nobody knows them, they're filing this lawsuit, it's free to them. Because the court has to, it's not may, it shall award court costs.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the pitfalls in this bill and the attack on parental rights, is just, I just can't understate it. I just can't.
So back to what you said about you, we try to assume that within their caucus meetings, they worked out the questions on this bill. It sure seems like if she wasn't prepared to answer these questions, there's a pretty sharp attorney, floor leader over in the House. I would just hope that maybe there's some more scrutiny when it hits the other side, but the way they're moving it so quickly, makes it really concerning that they're just going to pass this thing.
They are moving it quickly, and that's been brought up by people who've been at the Capitol a lot longer than I have, because I've asked some people that have been there for, 10, 15, 20 years, and just said, hey, have you ever seen anything like this? And they said, no, not in the first couple of weeks. We usually have to be a lot deeper in the session for this kind of. So I don't know. I don't know what their motivation is. I don't know if they... It's not to be the first in the country, because we know there's lots of other states that have already done it. I don't know why you would pick an anti-parental choice bill as something that you wanted to have on the governor's desk as the first bill out. Mm-hmm. I guess they're just relying on the fact that they can say one thing and convince the people that the bill is really not that bad. Nobody's ever going to read the bill. And the only groups that are going to really track it are going to be the medical professionals who are trying to figure out if they're going to leave the state or not, because they don't want to be put in this situation.
Mm-hmm. This looks to me like another one of those situations, though, where they may make the calculation that it plays to a certain energized part of their political base, and that they'll leave it up to the courts then to kick the thing back out. And they'll say, well, if it wasn't for those activist judges, we passed it at the legislative level. Keep electing us. We're doing that. And it's the height of cynicism, really, if you get right down to it.
I just don't know how they can, I don't want to say sell it. I just don't know how they can justify it, especially in the rural areas, because they're going to lose medical professionals. They don't have a lot right now anyway. They've had hospitals close. I mean, it's really rough on the rural communities right now. And so from a business standpoint, it's bad, because medical professionals are, if they don't leave the state, they're not going to want to come into the state if they're being told what is best practices and what's not, and what they can use and what practice they can use and what they can't. parents are going to start wondering what's going on if somebody threatens them, or when they go in to take their child to the pediatrician or the doctor, and the doctor who understands what's happened because it's his profession and it's his job, and he tells them, I can't do that, then the parents are going to be scratching their heads going, well, but I'm the mom, I'm the dad. And if anybody thinks that this encroaching on a parental rights to make healthcare decisions about their kids is going to end with this one bill, then they haven't been watching the Oklahoma legislature the last 10 years.
Well, I mean, just think of what's happening in Florida where, you know, the sports is, well, first of all, we already have to sign the gender waivers for our kids to participate in OSSAA things, which was really like a total WTF moment. But, you know, we think of what's happening in Florida where they're, you know, mandating to track female athletes' periods. You know, I mean, things that really intensely personal issues, things that we don't necessarily, why do we need to know these things? But I mean, we already see them manifesting in other states. To think that our legislature isn't going to get similar ideas when that's just what they do. I mean, these are invasive measures, right? I mean, they touch on the most private decisions in a family, you know, and just what's happened with abortion in our state, what's happening with this gender affirming care for our children. I mean, it's hard to be hopeful that things won't get worse, despite the efforts of very, very scrappy, wonderful Democrats. I mean, your caucus really, you know, turned the screws on them as best as you could.
Well, it was just very, very important. And it's so far reaching. And there's so many aspects that people, I don't even know if all the members understand the ramifications that we're looking at with this kind of legislation. So, you know, my caucus does a great job. My members do a great job of putting forth their positions as it relates to their districts. And as we do, we get a lot of feedback. We've got a lot of active districts and a lot of active people in the districts, and we get a lot of feedback. And sometimes we don't agree with it, but we were elected to represent our districts, and that's what we're doing. And the people in our districts, they see this, and they don't want the legislature being the supreme policymaker. They want the legislature doing what's best for their children. And this was a major strikeout for them because the parents have completely lost on this one. So I don't know how long it's going to take to sink in. I don't know how many parents are going to have to be told by their doctor that they can't have certain procedures because the law says they can't. Uh-huh. The supreme policymakers made that decision that the policy of the state will be, we will control this medical decision, parents, you will not. That's where we are with this bill.
So what can our listeners do before this train, you know, to try to get this train stopped, this legislative session? Does it do any good at all to weigh in with Republicans on this issue, or do you think it's just, this is where it's headed and they want to, and they'll just have to live with it?
I think that there are Republicans, and I serve with Republicans that genuinely care about parental rights and children's healthcare and their treatment. And then there's some that just their philosophy and their political attitude is just different. And I would tell people that, because I think you have the listeners that you have are probably pretty active and they probably are pretty savvy. I tell them, first of all, to read the bill, because they'll see that just exactly how much this language encroaches on the rights of parents and guardians to take care of their own children. And read the bill and then call your legislator and call the bill's author, Julie Daniels, and just say, you know, we don't want this. This is not what we want in our state. We don't want parents' control of medical decisions for their children taken away from them. And I've said it before, Arnold, and I mean it. If we all think that this is going to be the only time that the supreme policymaker of the state takes away parental rights to make healthcare decisions about their children, then we're dreaming.
Well, I mean, that's what supreme policymaker means, right? It's not just in this one little piece of legislation that has potentially sweeping consequences across, you know, and as someone who has had to make very consequential, life-changing decisions, you know, medical decisions, I personally, about my child, you know, I'd prefer that I have that control and not somebody else who doesn't even know them.
That phrase just should scare the hell out of everybody. Supreme policymaker. That's straight out of Orwell, right?
The legislature is the supreme policymaker of the state.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yikes.
So. Well, thanks for having me.
Yes. Thank you.
We're both going to say we're so grateful for your time. We really needed your insight and analysis on this. And seriously, a big thanks to you and your caucus for taking the fight to them for something that just has incredible impact and import for the entire state.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Appreciate what you all do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.